wants to warm up. Let's warm up.
Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 42. Today is January 28th, 2015. Today I'm joined by Eric Killer, Chelsea Como, Danny Ning, and Kirk Pettis. Of course, I am Matt Winterer. And we have a special guest tonight, Nick Ludwig. We'll be talking about mesh networking and internet freedom. And of course, as usual, Eric Taylor will take us away.
All right, so we were talking about last week we were talking about Bitcoin and the Ross Ulbricht trial, and you know, some ramifications that that could potentially have on an open internet. And it's been kind of a reoccurring topic on the show over the last couple months, as far as that and net neutrality. And I think last year, Nick, we had a Liberty Southwest meetup in Chanhassen where we covered mesh networking. It was probably a little under a year ago, right?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, and that was, you know, that was a good discussion. We kind of went over, you know, various technologies, Tor, encryption, and that type of thing. So we're brainstorming future topics, and, you know, that we'd go over mesh, which, Nick, you've used it to a certain extent, right? Did you use it last year at AgoraFest?
Yes, we did. We set up an ad hoc mesh network in the middle of the woods and in Frontenac, Minnesota. And we've also now since we've experimented in some of the local neighborhoods in which we'd like to actually start to get a little mesh going in the metro area of, you know, Twin Cities, too. Something more permanent.
Yep.
So what exactly is a mesh network?
Ah, yes. So a mesh network is, it's really kind of a broad term because it really just means that each device, computer device, whether it's a computer or a wireless router, that has Wi-Fi, normally with Wi-Fi, although you can set up meshes with other types of radios, but maybe before we get too complicated, the typical mesh network nowadays uses Wi-Fi, if you know what that is. It's something that's on your smartphone, on your laptop, or your other computer, or you have a router that you got when you got your, say, your cable or your DSL access to your house. And those all have Wi-Fi radios in them. So all the mesh network really means is that you install some software to allow those radios, whether they're in your smartphone, on your router, on your laptop, or whatever, to talk to each other directly without having to go through your internet provider or through a server, right? It's basically you're setting up kind of like a spider web or a mesh of radios that talk to each other, and they can be set up so that they automatically connect with each other once they sense or find another radio within range. So that's pretty much the basics of what a mesh network is. It doesn't have to be wireless either. I mean, you can set up mesh networks with wires. It's just that they tend to be much more useful in solving problems by using wireless, because then you don't have to run a bunch of wires around.
So right. I know it's a little different than what you're describing, but would it be because it, you know, this example actually uses, you know, the internet that I have, but would it be similar sort of in theory to like setting up a home group with your computer? So like, for example, my PlayStation will recognize that my computer is within distance so that I can, you know, pull music or movies off my laptop and have it stream on my a PlayStation. Of course, that's using my internet. So how would it be different, like with a mesh network? So you're having different devices that are linked to one another, but instead of using, you know, your Comcast internet, what is being used?
Yeah, there's some Very much so. There's a lot of similarities there. And I'm not familiar with how PlayStation works and whether it's really a mesh technically or not. But yes, you got the right idea. What setting up a mesh network allows you to do is to have anybody that's one of those devices talk to any other one that's within range, or that's another one, even if it's not in range directly, you can pass along that message or that information. So conceivably you can have a mesh that goes not just within your house, of course, it can go within your neighborhood, or we've now seen them around the world where, in particular in a couple areas of the world, where they're going for many hundreds of miles, all connected to one another. And yes, you can do the kinds of things that you're mentioning, passing files or sharing media, music or videos or whatever, just like you would do with any network, right? I mean, you can do anything on a mesh network that you can do with a regular network. So I think the unique things about mesh network is that you can set it up so that you can add new nodes or new computers, if you want to look at that. We new radios to the network automatically, so they can sense them and they'll automatically connect. So you can expand and extend the network very easily and quickly. And there's some other advantages too. That there's some privacy and other advantages. Like for example, you don't have to have the mesh network connected to the internet at all, or if you do, it can be only connected to maybe one computer, and you can limit that access. So you have a lot of flexibility with what you could do with it.
And so if you're not using the internet, what is it that's allowing, you know, this network to communicate or be connected?
Yeah, well, essentially you're setting up your own little private internet is all you're really doing. So you're setting up your own private network with your own addresses. And so whatever rules you decide to set up, whoever is the administrator or whoever decides to set up the network, then any other either phone or laptop or anybody within range can connect essentially to that network. So yeah, it's like I guess that would be one way to describe it. It is your own little private internet, which you could extend to the, you know, to the rest of the internet to the degree that you want to.
And to add a little bit to that, kind of, Chelsea, you're on the right path when comparing, you know, even a home local area network where you can play video or audio files from a PC to a PlayStation or, you know, a phone or whatever. What a mesh network is, it's an extrapolation of that. So you, in a lot of meshes, you have, you know, smartphones, which are typically Android because they're rootable, and you can associate with other smartphones, and you can be essentially on the same network. You can use wireless routers. Put on a specific type of firmware on those routers where you can link those wireless routers together. As long as the signal is strong enough, you can either use antennas native to the routers or amplify the signal with external antennas, which has been done successfully. Nick shot over the, you know, example of Gwifi.net, which is which I believe is the world's largest public mesh networks. They have 27,000 nodes.
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. So they have 27,000 nodes on the network, and it's essentially just a giant version of what you're talking about. And what some people do, you know, so you can communicate amongst various devices on the local mesh, but you have to have egress points to go out to the internet. Those are typically, you know, there are VPN tunnels and connections. They're in order to reach the external internet. A lot of the time what people do is they donate those connections. And there, you know, there are, there's a open network exchange that really facilitates that connectivity. So in Catalonia, they have a really good situation because they have an upstream backbone provider that's willing to provide them access. And the advantages, you know, advantages to that is it provides, you know, cheap access in an area that otherwise probably wouldn't be served by, you know, ISPs or telcos. And that's, at least at this point, that's how mesh networks have really come to be. But the interesting and to me the exciting aspect of mesh networks is eventually as you, and especially as you start talking about, you know, it's a way overused term, the Internet of Things, where you can embed Wi-Fi antennas and you can, you can, they can participate on the mesh with, you know, your wireless routers, your phones, your laptops and that type of thing. It presents the opportunity to, provide network access without utilizing the large broadband carriers, which, you know, are prone to government regulation and charge pretty high fees for what you get in services and that type of thing.
Yes, right. So those are really all good, great points there. There's a lot of potential with mesh networks that, if you use your imagination, it gets to be kind of fun thinking about what you can do.
Go ahead, Danny.
I heard Danny.
I guess I was going to say to kind of sum it up, does it kind of work like a, intranet, but it's kind of like each of us have like its own servers. Is that kind of how it works?
You can have your own servers, but you don't need them. You've heard of the phrase peer-to-peer, and I think that that's another good way to describe what mesh networks are. Is it really? Actually, they don't necessarily have to be this way, but ideally, one of the great advantages of them is that you can set up a peer-to-peer network, which means that everybody or anybody who wants to can serve files or information from their particular node, if you want to call it that. Node is a good word, but node could be, just like Eric said, it could be a phone, could be a computer, could be a wireless router. It could be anything that, if we're talking about a wireless mesh network, anything that's got a radio, anything that's got a Wi-Fi radio in it. And yeah, in the future, there's probably going to be, you know, your refrigerator is probably going to have a Wi-Fi radio. A lot of vehicles already, there are actually cars now with Wi-Fi. Yep. So they can just be part of the mesh. They can hook in. And at least if maybe not right away, you have probably hack the stupid software limitations that the auto manufacturers have built into them. But you get past that, and yeah, they could be a part of the mesh network as well.
Something I'd like to mention, just a fun fact, is the entirety of Wikipedia can be downloaded by anybody at any time. It's freely available. So you could download all of Wikipedia, and it's only like 130 some odd gigs. It's not a lot.
Yeah,
and then you could bring that somewhere that did not have access to it because of political persecution or any other reason, and you could offer that up freely to everybody who was there on a mesh network.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody just sets up a little file server and links it into their little radio, and then everybody else can access it. Well, assuming that set up some sort of a web page or something, but. Right.
It's not quite as simple as I made it to be, but you can overcome this political censorship with this technology.
Absolutely, yeah.
One thing I'm just still kind of missing. So when you talk about, you know, how everybody's linked together and how you can, you know, transfer information across this network. Sorry, I'm a little pedestrian on the topic, but. So is it similar to, so for example, I have an Android phone and my brother has an Android phone, and instead of sending like a text message or an email, there's this thing he did where he beamed a bunch of pictures of my niece over to my phone.
Yeah.
And it was like by putting them close together, it was like the information went from one to the other. like, we accepted that we were, you know, the phones were okay accepting and giving between each other.
Yeah.
And then.
Sounds like you use
Bluetooth. Is it like that?
Well, so there's, you know, yeah, it might it's have similar. Been. There's some similarities, but, yeah, there's some differences too. Maybe, you know, if you want, maybe I can describe, a couple, examples. We could talk about what we did at AgoraFest, and that might help you understand about, some of the things, the uses that you could put to it, right? And because, let's face it, yeah, one of the reasons that mesh networks have become popular is because of rural areas that lack access, areas that are difficult to get internet connections in. So mesh networks are used a lot in agriculture and farms and so forth, just to get some kind of network access out in an area that it's impossible to do otherwise. And so you might find, okay, yeah, what do you want to use it for? Well, you may want to use it just to be able to pass files along or to make a phone call or to send a text message in the middle of the desert or the middle of the woods, right? So we set up about 7 or 8 radios in a 20-some acre, 20-30 acre site, most of which was not connected to it, had no internet access, right? There was no way to get internet. You couldn't get any internet bars on your phone or your laptop unless you were near the front building, which was this big stone building. And in fact, it was so, you know, stone and steel that even within the building, it was difficult to get access. So what we did is we just started spreading around this woods and camping area, a bunch of radios about, you know, a couple hundred meters away from each other with we had a long one that was about a quarter mile, but most of them were between, 300, 500 feet distant from each other. You can go farther, but you know, it just depends on what you need to do and what kind of antennas you have. So, and then each one of those, you obviously have to plug it into some kind of power. So it's either AC power. You can run them off of solar if you had solar or off of batteries. But when we configure the software and turn each of those on, what happened is that now you're in the middle of a meadow or you're middle of the woods and you've got your phone or your laptop and you all of a sudden you have access to the internet where you didn't before. So that alone is a cool thing, right? You can essentially extend or expand your ability to get internet access into places that was either incredibly difficult or, you know, you have to use a satellite dish or something or impossible. So that's number one, I think, a good reason to look at meshes. It just allows you to do that. And you can do that again, even in a urban environment. Say people do this and have done it in factories where you've got a lot of steel and concrete. And so you got a lot of, electromagnetic interference. So what do you do? Well, you just set up radios inside and out and make them so that they can either, they can see each other or they're within line of sight so they can talk to each other. And then all of a sudden you've extended, a good connectivity for either the internet or for what other reasons you need within an area that, for sort of the opposite reasons, you've got too much concrete and steel to be able to connect, reliably. And so there's another reason to use this kind of technology. The Commotion people, which is one of the people that make an open source software solution, they did an experiment. I don't know if it was on one of those videos, but they've got one where they used a phone. They used a laptop, a couple laptops and a router and a phone. And they sent a couple of these young folks in Washington, D.C. They just sent them out to take a walk, you know, take a walk down the street and see if you can stay connected. And it was kind of cool because they had some connectivity within a few buildings in the D.C. area. And then, but then their network stopped. But then this person kept walking and the phone was connected to the network, and then it said extended it out another block or two. Although you don't really get much more than that with smartphones. They don't have a lot of power, and their antennas are crap too. But they got another couple blocks, you know. And so imagine if you had a situation, and I know the people that are into the people out of San Francisco, the fire chat people, right? Mm-hmm. Open garden people. That's kind of their approach, is to say, get thousands of people with smartphones that have got mesh network software on them. And all of a sudden you just keep sending your signal hop from phone to phone to phone, and extend this network, is anywhere you want, you know, in the middle of a park, or out in the harbor, or whatever you happen to be. See, so I'm hoping that this is helping illustrators see the vision of what you can do. In other words, every device that's got a radio can be part of the network, and they can help just pass messages or pass information. Could be files, could be information, could be text, could be phone calls to somebody else that could be in the opposite side of the city, but there's a mesh. There's a number of hops or a number of people that are connected to other people that are connected to other people that allow you then to get that message to that person on the other side of the city. So instead of taking one hop or two or three hops, your signals maybe, or your message is taking 100 different hops to get to where you want it to get to. Does that help or no?
Okay. Yeah. So instead of, you know, having, the way that I currently understand the system. So like if I send a text message, I send it directly to, you know, the recipient, and then that floats around in the air until it finds the recipient, and then that message is delivered, right? Is that fair?
No, actually, here's what happens is that when you use a cellular phone, system, what you're doing is you're actually sending your message to a tower, to a radio on a tower. And then that is routed usually very quickly. It's not cellular anymore. It actually goes to wired connections, and it routes it centrally through the central system of the phone company, which then finds the address of the recipient that you want to send the text message to, finds if they're on, if they're available, or they're on, or I guess it doesn't matter. They can be off. It'll deliver it when they turn their phone on. And then it'll route it to a cell phone tower, to a radio on a tower near to where that person is, and then deliver the message that way. So cell phone systems are very centralized, right? They really are. They can hop your signal from one tower to another and one radio to another, but everything is really routed, not directly from person to person. It's routed through a central,
Would it be fair to say that the cell phone companies basically have their own very large mesh network?
You know, I think it's probably, to some degree it is, but it really isn't, because what they're really trying to do is they're really trying to route everything through a central routing system. Now they have servers, and I'm sure they have plenty of them, and they have servers in different parts of the different cities and different areas. So it's not quite the same. And in fact, that's why I say mesh is got a lot of advantages, because the mesh is really designed to be, at least these open source software systems, is designed to be serverless. In other words, there is no central hub. It's all done. It's all routed. Kind of like what you mentioned, that it's what you would like to think that would happen, is that I want to send you a message. It just gets to you. Now it may take a circuitous path to get there, but it's going to find you. And what the mesh network software does is it keeps in its memory these routing tables that it's kind of updating all the time to find out, well, where are these nodes at? Where are the people at? Like, for example, if you're on a cell phone and you're walking around, it kind of keeps, it tries to keep up well, where is your address and how far away is it and what location is it at and how powerful is your signal or not powerful. So it's very dynamic and it does all this stuff without any kind of intervention by human beings. It's supposed to be self-expanding, self-healing, kind of very resilient in that way.
Yeah.
And let me
add a little bit to what Nick was saying. When you send a text message, an SMS text message, really what happens is it communicates, your phone sends what are called cell heartbeats to a cellular provider tower to, you know, basically saying, I'm here, are you there, I'm here, are you there. Your SMS, your text message rides on top of those cell heartbeats. So from a carrier perspective, it's a 100% margin product. That once it gets on, you know, their network, it's then packetized, into, you know, the same, type of, information as your data is packetized when communicating over, you know, internet connection, goes over the cellular network or the IP network, their wire connections into the towers, goes over that, network to wherever the other cell phone is connected to, whatever tower is connected to, and then goes to the recipient's phone on a cell heartbeat. Now, when you send like an iMessage, or if you're using WhatsApp or Skype, or you're sending those messages, it's just, you know, it's an IP to IP connection, and everything on,
which means it's normal internet connections, not SMS.
Right. Yeah. Everything is turned over to IP off of the cell tower. So your voice connections are voice over IP over their networks and that type of thing. Whereas when you're talking about mesh, you have, like Nick was saying, you have the ability to send, you know, it wouldn't really be a text message. You'd use an application like FireChat that Nick was talking about. You load that onto. Is that out for Android yet, or is it still just on iPhone?
I don't know. I tried using it and failed, so I haven't kept up with
it. Give me a minute. I'll let you know.
Yeah, so you can use something like FireChat where you can, you know, your cell phone – is if you have it rooted and you're on a mesh network, it can communicate with any number of other cell phones, and it chooses a phone with the strongest signal preferred path and would send your text message like message over an open source application like FireChat to the most desirable next hop, and in turn that next hop same thing until it gets to the other phone or device, and it would be completely off of the cellular network, which is one of the, you know, one of the huge benefits of using mesh. It's a, you know, a community initiative where you're depending on others to provide that access from, you know, if you're using a FireChat scenario, your phone to, you know, maybe sending it to my phone over a network, over a mesh network.
And FireChat is available on Android right now.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's really significant. You know, I didn't understand that, you know, when I send something, you know, on my phone or my computer, that it doesn't go straight from my phone to the recipient. It goes to this centralized, you know, location where, you know, that's owned by the ISPs or that's owned by the, you know,
cell company.
Yeah.
Well, how else are they going to track you?
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, the NSA has to track you somehow, and they do that usually by putting their equipment inside the phone company's systems. That's what they do. You know, they're using the phone company systems to capture this information.
Or in some cases, right on the phones themselves, right?
Yeah. It's true. They can, but I don't think they usually even bother unless it's really they're really trying to. Yeah, they don't need to. You're using the cell networks. Everything you're doing is through the cell networks. Or same idea. If you're communicating and you want to be private and secure, and you're communicating through, I think, even Skype or email or whatever you're doing, and you're routing it over the internet, well, yeah, you know, it's very difficult to try to keep that secure. And in fact, I usually assume it isn't secure,
right?
Unless I'm using asymmetric encryption, and even then, they're probably getting the information that there's some encrypted communications going on, and they can track on who it was that's sending and receiving that encrypted communication. But if you have a mesh network, you know, you that's not connected to the internet, and you're just routing internal to that network, it's a lot more difficult for somebody to tap into your communications.
So that's interesting. So it's sort of bringing it back to a community. Oh, go ahead, Danny. Are you there, Danny?
Sounded like he was in a second.
Oh,
there you go. He's having some phone issues, I think.
Yeah. But you're right. I think you said the word community, and that's absolutely right. Is that, you know, you can decide how big or small or whatever you want to do with this, but it's certainly possible for you to decide, yeah, we'd like to have a community, whether it's actually geographically local or just you're a community of people that have the same ideas and beliefs, and you want to try to establish some kind of wireless communications that is secure. Mesh is a good approach to do that. And it's still, I mean, nothing's 100% for sure, but it's a lot easier to secure that.
And there are,
because you're not sending it to that centralized, you know,
right,
location.
Exactly.
Okay. And there are open source initiatives that CJDNS is an example of one that want to provide, you know, both the network capabilities for mesh networking as well as encryption capabilities. So encrypting communication that's, you know, developed in an open source context, you know, so that's, you know, it's always probably going to be a moving target, having complete privacy or encryption as far as communications are concerned. But one of the advantages of having a mesh network is if you administer that, or an administrator of that network, you can close it off, you know, potentially, like in the context of AgoraFest or community meshes, it can be an autonomous network that's not connected to the outside world. And you can have, you know, your various, you know, you could have video servers running, or, you know, call each other, text each other, have resources available, but it's, you know, theoretically just available to the community that's participating.
That's right. Exactly. You could close it off. In fact, really, you know, you can set up a mesh network. We were experimenting with that, but we never got that far last year. But one of our ideas was is that we would run on the same network, on the same mesh network, we would run two networks. We would have a public network that had access to the internet and that anybody could use, you know, anybody that walked onto the, into that area, you know, could actually connect to it. And then we'd have another network, you know, that would run just parallel alongside of it, that was a more private, secure network. And we may do that next year, just because. And the reason why is we thought, well, we might actually want to run financial transactions through, you know, for if people wanted to, we could set them up with a separate network. That again, we don't have to set up more radios. This is all just logical, just another logical network that ran separately and encrypted and wasn't connected to the internet. So anyway, lots of things you can do. There's no end to the possibilities, but that's certainly possible to do that. Yes.
Danny, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back, but I think you answered my question. Within the mesh network, I didn't really quite hear, you know, we talk about, you know, connecting, you know, hardware to hardware, whether it's like a cell phone to another cell phone or whatever. You know, if I was quite sure if we can, like, let's say surf the internet, like go to Google and stuff like that, but it seems like we can do that with the mesh network. Is that correct?
It depends. If you have, you can really do it multiple ways, but, you know, two distinct ways, or you can communicate with only devices that are connected to the mesh, or you can utilize, you know, it can be a laptop, wireless router, phone. If it has an external connection to the internet, that could be an exit point from the network.
That's right. Yeah, in the lingo of a lot of the mesh software, they call it a gateway. And essentially that you just are setting up a gateway to the public or to the rest of the internet. And it could be, there could be several of them, right? In other words, there could be several different gateways that are connected to the internet. And I'm sure there are, for example, these large public networks like in Catalonia. I'm sure they have hundreds of gateways, not thousands. But what's cool is, of course, not everybody has to have one. In other words, people can access the internet without having their own internet, you know, paying and buying their own internet connection. They can use – essentially what happens is the mesh network routes them to the closest, most convenient internet connection within the mesh network, and then they use that one.
So essentially one person on a functioning mesh network could say, you know, buy their internet from a provider, and everyone in the network could access it.
Absolutely. That's exactly what can happen. Of course you have to have a little, you know, have a little, what is the word? Politeness and, you know, and be reasonable, because obviously, you know, the potential for misuse is there as well. But yeah, you can basically essentially share an internet connection, right, between several people, whatever the needs are of your community.
So then my question is, when it comes to, you know, anonymity and when it comes to having, you know, secured information being transferred along this mesh network, if there's a gateway, does that undermine, you know, all of the rest of the transmissions? Or is it only the information where they're going out, you know, to the Googles and, you know, when they're going out to the rest of the internet, is it only that information that gets, you know, shared with the ISPs and the Googles of the world? Or is it all the information then exposed, or is there like a gateway in essentially from the, you know, the NSA, or somebody could get in to discover all of the transmissions
great
on the
question.
Mesh network?
Yeah,
by a having question. A gateway.
It is a good question, and the answer is a little complicated, but let's kind of walk through it, because as you probably maybe you've heard this, that there is a difference, or it's good to distinguish between anonymity and privacy. And the reason why is that you can actually, do a lot to keep your privacy on the public internet by not using, you know, your real name, encrypting, your information. But if you're still using the public internet from your home, using the internet service that you purchase from Comcast or from whoever, and then you pay for that with a check out of your checking account. And
yeah,
your name,
yeah.
They can
use deductive reasoning to go, okay, we
that's
know
right.
That's it.
That's right. You can pretty well tell who this person is. And you see it even now. I mean, like Facebook, my online bank is because I use a lot of different technologies, including VPNs and Tor and to get into my bank account. And they will, you know, they will ask me. They will say, well, was that you at this IP address? And because they want to, you know, they've got their own security issues and they're trying to keep track of people. But so what I'm saying is that in addition to the things that you're already doing to try to keep your privacy and anonymity, what the mesh networks adds to that is that, if you're using a gateway, some gateway, say you're using mine, using Nick's gateway to get out to the real internet. Well, where the ability to track you or to track your and match up your messages or your information or what you're doing is going to come back to not necessarily you. It's going to come back to me because I'm the, like Eric said earlier, I'm the exit or the entrance node. I'm the gate between you on the mesh somewhere and the rest of the world. So, It actually gives you a little bit more anonymity because now your IP address on the mesh network is something totally different and unrelated to the rest of the internet. And of course, you didn't buy unless you pay me like in cash, like once a month you give me $10. But that you would do that in cash, right? Not you wouldn't write me a check. the next time we see each other, right? And right. That way you've kept your name, your real name, away from your internet connection. So it can be useful for that purpose. It can be another barrier from establishing, you know, sort of connecting the dots and establishing who you are with what you're doing. Again, it's not nothing's perfect. But the mesh is useful for that purpose as well.
So theoretically speaking, we could start up a nonprofit seeking to ensure the privacy and rights of individuals. Mm-hmm. Have that entity, that nonprofit organization, purchase internet, and then you know maybe people make charitable contributions to that nonprofit in cash, you know, and then all
I like
of,
the way you're
all
thinking.
Of the activity.
As long as I don't have to be on the board of the nonprofit, you know, somebody's going to have to. You're going to have somebody there that's going to be the designated.
Who carries the nice insurance policy?
Yeah, right. Somebody's going to have to be, as I call, you know, as you know, you do this in accounting too. Somebody's going to have to be the designated felon, right? Always somebody is going to have to be the outside person. But yeah, right. And then you can have
PR.
Yeah. And of course, there's other things you can do that can even help there. But yes, you can borrow, internet connection. We actually were playing around with this, not too long ago. We were testing out our mesh software. We just thought we would find an open Wi-Fi access point somewhere nearby and see if we could tap into it, because theoretically any open Wi-Fi access point, in other words, as you know, like go to Starbucks or McDonald's or whatever, theoretically you could set that up if they haven't nailed it down properly, you know, on their end, to actually function as a gateway to your mesh, right? So in other words, you could actually route mesh packets through a wireless Wi-Fi access point without them even knowing. And unless, of course, you know, you started again, you got a little greedy and you started flooding and, you know, saturating that access point. Somebody might get wise to it. But again, so you see what you can do. In other words, all you're doing is you're just routing things through that gate, and it can work, particularly, like I say, if they've been a little sloppy in the way they set up their wireless access point. Most people, of course, you should lock them down and password protect them and so forth. But if you find one that doesn't, then hey, could be another gateway to the internet.
an awesome node to utilize.
Yeah, and then nobody knows. I mean, who is that? Nobody knows who that person, you know. Then they say, well, you've been routing, you know, stuff. And they go, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the legal precedence is already set for that, so. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, there's been cases before where people have been drawn up on charges, but they've had open networks, and the open network has been enough to say, well, you didn't know what you were doing, so we're going to let you have a pass this time.
Was some illegal or questionable activity on their network, but because they didn't password protect it, there was enough of a reasonable doubt to say, well, we can't prove that it was you because anybody could have been accessing it. Is that what you're saying the legal precedent is?
Right.
Exactly. It's a lot more probable if you live like an apartment complex, but if you live by yourself and you're a quarter mile from anybody else, it gets a little harder to prove.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I always heard back in the day people would write right on the sidewalks for people driving around to notice that, oh, this house is open, unsecure network.
Yeah, right. War chalk.
Well, Google did that.
Yeah.
Google drove around and mapped all the open Wi-Fi access points all around every city, and then they got in trouble because they were publishing that information.
Really?
Well, right, people were mad about it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, put a password on your Wi-Fi, I guess they learn, right? But
right.
I heard something about like Google Internet coming to a select few cities around the country.
It's already out.
To be like a hundred. So it's like supposed to be like 100 times faster or something.
It's gigabit, so it's all fiber, and it runs at gigabit. So most people have, like right now I have 50 megs per second, and it's megabit down per second. And this is 1,000 megabits per second down. So it's much faster. Now, and that's depending on what you're connecting to, because if the source doesn't have the ability to do that much throughput, then you won't get that speed, but it's massively fast. You're going to saturate most networks very quickly with that kind of a connection.
It's a lot cheaper, but Google runs up against the entrenched telecom and cable interests who lobby pretty hard with local and state public utility commissions. So they that's a problem for them. So where are they now? They're in Kansas City, Austin, and they'd like to expand. But it's when you're talking, either from a municipal or a third party, getting past the lobbyist interests of your
I'll just comment on that. I know a couple guys who had their campaigns contributed to by the local cable company without knowledge of what that intention was. However, it definitely happened.
Yeah, and kind of. To go back to Chelsea's point, to me, that's one of the most interesting aspects of mesh networks. As wireless technologies get cheaper and cheaper, or Wi-Fi technologies get cheaper, more powerful. What's to prevent a community from getting together and paying for a fiber connection? To an ISP. Maybe it might be a little bit more than a cable connection, but there are, if you wanted to now, let's say where you're living, Chelsea, you could get a group of people together and purchase a fiber connection from CenturyLink and set up a mesh network and basically, if you want to pay for it, you can, set up a cooperative and you really can route around, censorship or high fees. You have to, find, a carrier that's supportive of that idea. And I kind of wanted to go back to Nick and ask, first of all, you mentioned that you have a couple of trials set up I'm guessing, based on the fact that you mentioned Commotion, is that what you use to, not only ORFS, but with the other mesh projects, is that what you use to connect to some type of outside source?
Yeah, Commotion is really a set of it's really mostly software. It's really open source, open WRT, if you're familiar with that. It's really open source software that this little nonprofit, Commotion's a nonprofit.
Yeah.
has packaged nicely with a few nice little management tools and things to help people establish mesh networks quickly and easily. In fact, it's a really cool website, Commotion Wireless. You should check it out because it even goes into how do you mount a radio on an antenna up on a, if you got a chimney, how do you mount it? If you want to mount it on a gable end, how do you do that? Or on a flat roof, you know, how do you get power to it? All these kind of just basic things. They got a little workbook and a manual, and it's beautiful. And then they got the software there. The only disadvantages, or there's a few disadvantages to Commotion. And one of them is that they don't support a real broad range of routers.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but they do support Ubiquiti, which really makes really awesome and inexpensive routers. And so, to me, it wasn't a big deal because I want to use Ubiquiti routers anyway. So, at least for the short term, it'd be nice to have a little more broad ability to use different kind of router products. And really, you can. I mean, you can just go download OpenWRT and roll your own and just do it. But it's a little more, it takes a little more technical ability, a little more ability with Linux and installing, you know, because basically what you're doing is you're reflashing the memory in these routers, replacing the router software that's in there that you got when you bought the wireless router or you got it from your cable company. You're basically just replacing that shit with a whole new operating system and other stuff. So if you're comfortable doing that, you don't need to even use Commotion. You can just go out on the internet and get the stuff. But if you want to, we thought let's start with a little nicer, a more an easier stepping stone to this whole thing, and Commotion has been good for that. And so yeah, we use that, and we use Ubiquiti routers, which are cool, and I tell you, we were so pleasantly surprised at the performance of those things at AgoraFest. You know, we're using some of the real cheaper ones with non-directional, you know, unidirectional antennas, or not, you know, they're omnidirectional antennas. And then we had a couple where we had to go a longer distance where we actually pointed them and had sort of directional antennas. And the power these things put out, I mean, it's really not even so much power. The gain, I should say, if you know your radio terminology, it was all in the antenna. I mean, they were drawing the same amount of power of the radio as the other ones, but the antennas had so much more gain that we had one guy, we had one pointed, and it was about a quarter mile away, and the other guy had the other radio sitting on the ground in the grass. It kind of just generally pointed in the right direction, but it hadn't even mounted it on a pole or anything like that. And the moment he turned the switch on, we were getting like 5 bar signal a quarter mile away. And so I had my two-way radio and I said, "Hey, that was quick. You put the thing on you put the pole up and got it up on the roof." And the guy goes back and says, "No, I haven't put it on the roof yet. I haven't touched it. I just turned it on. It's sitting on the ground." But it was such good quality routers that it actually was able to transmit, you know, just the way it was, you know, laying on the ground. So I guess all I'm saying is that I'm putting a promo out for Ubiquiti equipment. Really good stuff and not that expensive. And so,
how much?
So I'd recommend that.
How much did they run?
The smallest ones, which are kind of, yeah, a little omnidirectional. I think they're the Pycos. That's what they are. About, you know, less than $100 a piece, about, you know, 60, 70, 80 bucks a piece, depending on how many you buy at a time. And then the next one up is about 100 and a quarter, 100 to 150. And then if you really want some high gain antennas, you know, if you really get something in the air and you want to say you need to go a mile or two to connect a couple nodes together, which you can do. You can go several miles if you really have optimal
conditions, you know, really good line of sight. They got a couple, they got another model that has some antennas with some unbelievable gain, like, the, you know, 30, 40 dB gain, something like that, which, if, again, you know, your radio stuff, it means you're basically, you're taking the power, the initial power of that radio and multiplying it times 5, 6, 7, 8.
That's the wonderful part about radio is you can, without a license, operate something with a really good antenna, very low wattage, and you still don't have to have a license for it.
That's right. And again, we're, you're dealing with public, you know, non-licensed Wi-Fi. So you're not supposed to, you know, you're supposed, you do have power limitations that, you know, you're supposed to adhere to. And you don't really need a lot of power. What you need is you need good antennas and you need line of sight as much as possible because these little, these are little microwaves, you know, these are very, very small little, they're in, this is the gigahertz band. And so they, these little microwaves, they get distracted by things like leaves and other shit. Anything in their way really kind of is a problem. So it's good to have line of sight if you can.
So what do you think the weaknesses of the mesh networks right now are, the drawbacks, problems? Is security an issue? Do you have to, you know, if you're all on, do you all have to have certain security measures to keep people from accessing your node that you're accessing a mesh network, or?
Well, like I say, I think security is actually an advantage, but certainly security is always a challenge because there's no end to it, right? I mean, you know, this is not a, security is not a, it's not a, a destination. It's a journey always, you know, and, But no, so you can, if you have control of your own node, which is the ideal way to do it, right? In other words, the beauty of sort of the community public mesh network is that you decide, I want to be a part of this. And then somebody who's like an administrator will say, here, okay, here's the names that we're using. Here's the address we're using if you want to join up. But you decide, like, if you want to admin your own node, if you want to limit, you want to limit bandwidth, you could go as far as saying, I only want my six neighbors to access this particular node. You can do that. In other words, you have total flexibility as to how you want to configure that particular node. Now, obviously, the more tighter you crank it down, the less useful it is to the public at large, but it's all up to you. And of course you can password protect it or not. If you password protect it, then of course anybody that's going to use it is, that's going to log into it from, say, the outside, like if there's somebody wants to, they're in your neighborhood or they're outside your house and they want to log into it, they're going to need a password then. So again, it limits its functionality, but you can do that or you can leave it wide open.
Well, I mean, can other, like, say, this was just on a grand scale, say in Catalonia, where, you know, so is it a weakness that you can hack into other people's computers or phones easier if they're all on the mesh network, or is it, or is that harder to do? Or, I mean, say, you know, how people say that you shouldn't use the open Wi-Fi at, you know, Starbucks or something like that, that your computer can get accessed easier. But is that kind of the same issue then, or?
Yeah, it is. There's no really differences there. I mean, and so it's you still are responsible for protecting and securing your device, right? Whatever device you're going to use to access it. It doesn't make it any harder or easier. And yes, it's certainly possible that somebody could use the mesh network just like they use the internet to hack into somebody's computer. So it doesn't really help or hurt either way. It's really, all you're doing is really extending, you know, a network out.
But you're also limiting the scope of your vulnerability to the people who are on the mesh network, and if, at that point, you may or may not trust them more than the general internet.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's part of it. Is that, you know, just like anything else, if you The bigger you make this thing, the more potential there's going to be for problems and abuse. And I'm sure that the Catalonian mesh network has its share of problems and drama and stuff. But
one of the advantages is that if you've got somebody that's a bad actor or a bad player, you know, you can identify that node. And if it's something that maybe it's somebody that owns the node or that has access to node that's actually kind of, you know, you can shut them out of the network, right? In other words, you can basically say, you know, you're not going to play anymore. You know, in other words, you basically lock them out of the whole mesh. You can do that. And an admin, if they want to use that power, you can administer the entire network from one node and reach out to every other single node that's, and you know, you can have control over the entire network from one node. You know, we were administering, you know, at GoreFest, we were basically talking to all the other nodes from one laptop, and we could tell what their range was, you know, in other words, how strong signals they had and how far they went. And, you know, we had a graphical map of the whole thing. So that's pretty small scale, because you can imagine if you had thousands and thousands of nodes. I think they even have like a zoomable, some sort of a map that kind of shows the whole network layout, you know, and all the different connections. It's like a, you know, it's a spider's web. It's a huge, you know, bunch of spaghetti, particularly when you get into Barcelona and you get into the rural urban area. I mean, they've got, yeah, I think they have nodes set up like on every block. Somebody will just paste one up, nail one up on a somewhere and wire it up, and they're rolling, you know. So I'm sure it's a really amazingly complex web of stuff in the big city.
And to kind of add to what Nick mentioned as far as security on a mesh network, Kirk, kind of there is an axiom that in network security that, you know, you ultimately are responsible for your own security. So if that's on a cell phone or whatever device you're using, you have the software and methods available to yourself to secure that communication, to secure your device, to encrypt communication and that type of thing. So there's really, from a security perspective, when you talk about mesh networks versus the public internet, the same type of security principles apply to both. There really is no difference between the two.
Yeah, and that was what I was wondering, if it masks your ISP then, because of the interlaced through the one server.
You can do that, and Nick was referencing this in the, when he mentioned, you know, he uses all kinds of encryption or all kinds of technologies when online. You can use anonymizing services like Tor. We all know that's not too anonymous if you're.
Well, yeah, I know that stuff, but I meant, like, does the mesh network itself, you know, hide the ISP?
Like the home group.
Because of, since it's its own little group that's connected to the larger group, that inner group, then if would it mask it, since everything goes through the one server that's connected to the internet, or the one server as is?
Yeah, you can mask it by utilizing VPN connectivity to a host outside and encrypting that connection, or potentially encrypting communication inside of the network as well.
So the software will still always, though, utilize the ISP of that computer unless you're masking it.
Yeah, because you got your you know, it's going to be you can assign, you know, basically every node, you know, just like you would be if you were hooking up to your cable provider. You know, it's going to assign an address, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how IP works, so you can't really avoid that, because otherwise nothing works. You know, that's how you network, is that it assigns you an address. So the people know what your node is. But yeah, you can VPN it. You can use a proxy like Tor. One of the cool things we were talking about when we were kind of discussing this last year is that, you can have your own VPN even within, you know, if you had a pretty large mesh network. Yeah, you can actually run your own VPN inside of it, and which would then give you some, it would make it difficult even within the mesh network for people to track where your communications and where your packets are coming from. But,
or multiple VPNs, kind of a Tor, but yeah, or you just, you route around packets to multiple devices. So it's not real clear as what device is originating or ending device in the communication.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the coolest and the most immediately useful advantages of mesh networks for people that are, say, members of communities that are, that have an ideology that is the, a minority ideology that is not understood by most people and even threatens some people, right? So people like that always can use ways to communicate their ideas a little more securely and privately, as well as they may have certain things they want to talk about that they really consider important enough that they want to take special efforts. Well, so mesh networks give you another tool to say, look, if we want, we can set up our own little network that is either not connected to the internet at all, or only connected to it when we want it to be. And you can have a little better idea of privacy, as well as you can share. So you can save cost savings where you can share internet access among a group, which is always good, save a little money, as well as offer your own service, you serve your own files and storage right within the mesh network. The radios that we're using right now go up to 150 megabits a second speed. So you're probably going to, if you set up a mesh network, you're probably going to be running higher speeds than the vast majority of you have with any internet connection that you purchase from, you know, from Comcast or CenturyLink or whoever you get it from, right? And if you go to the AC radios, which are the, you know, the next one, the next one up from that, they'll run half a gig. They'll run 450 megabits a second. So real fast. So you guys want to stream video, multiple stream video. You got some presentation you want to do. You can, a mesh network will allow you to do that very inexpensively, right? You'll be able to route multiple high definition streams of video if you want to, including audio, and, you know, for whatever purposes you want, you'll have that capability. And it'll only get better. I think AC can get up to gigabit speeds if you broaden the bandwidth enough, you know, if you set up the radio so that they're really blasting, a pretty, wide band of traffic. They'll go up to gigabit. So there you go. You got wireless fiber on your mesh network, and
And I know you guys are probably getting sick of this perspective, but once again, I think we're seeing. I don't know. I'm seeing a pattern here. You know, we've talked about many different topics and many different issues in our society today and how then we go about solving them. And this is just another example that I'm seeing where the answer lies with each other, within, you know, ourselves, you know, as people saying, how are we going to solve this? We're not going to run to mommy, daddy government and say, oh, help us because, you know, Google's stealing my information. Instead, we're saying, what can we do about it? What actions can I take as an individual that then, as many individuals acting in their own self-interest, are coming to a greater solution? You know, so by taking it upon ourselves as individuals and finding other people that have those similar goals, you know, acting in their own self-interest, we're starting to come up with different solutions to some problems that we wouldn't be able to solve if we went to our legislature. We wouldn't be able to solve if we went to our government or if we went to Comcast and said, hey, I don't like this. Once again, I'm seeing the pattern where the solution ends up being us taking back the control by taking action in our own lives and not asking for permission from somebody else, but just saying, hey, what can I do as an individual to change this? I don't like that I'm being spied upon. I don't like, you know, that all of my, you know, personal data is being captured. And so what am I going to do about it? And once again, this seems like another example of people acting in their own self-interest and by doing so solving some of these huge problems that are coming to the surface.
I'd agree with that. And I think it would not surprise me at all. I mean, when you're talking about mesh networking, you're talking about open source software, free communications with, you know, voluntary relationships with, you know, within a community. And it wouldn't surprise me, you know, within the next, let's say 5 or 10 years, if you see the software, and hardware technology become more ubiquitous, to see, you know, mesh networks as, you know, being utilized more and more in various communities to bypass traditional broadband connectivity.
I agree.
Yeah, I think it would be sweet around an entire lake. You know, lakes have generally eye line sight, you know, across, you can crisscross the mesh all the way across the lake pretty easily. If you can get the range across the lake, the open body, but you might not even need that as well.
You can easily do it across. You know that water is conductive, right?
Yes.
So you can actually send a radio signal across open water, and it actually will go farther than if it's going across the land.
So you could have an underwater node. Or receiver.
Theoretically, as I understand the physics, you can do it underwater, but it's a little difficult to radiate. You know, you have to have a special antenna. There was a guy, we're getting off the subject, but sometime later you can talk to me and I'll tell you about the guy that had the antenna, the radio antenna made out of a water fountain. It's kind of cool.
Nice.
So you're saying that if there was a perfect place in the world to conduct an experiment or build an experiment around mesh networking, the land of 10,000 lakes, well, that might be a pretty good place to do it.
Sure. I think so.
Well, folks, we all know what that music means. I'm going to say thank you very much, Nick, for joining us tonight.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely going to get invited back. Definitely. After that, I'm going to say, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 42. This has been Eric Taylor, Danny Ning, Kirk Pettis, Chelsea Como, myself, Matt Winter, and our special guest, Nick Ludwig. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Adios, mofo.
Peace out.